Good evening, and if you're just tuning in, welcome. You are listening to UFO Paranormal Radio Network, also known as United Public Radio Network. We like to call it just UPRN, and you're listening to The Angel Rock. I'm your host, Laura Lee Potvin. I have another amazing guest for both of you this evening. Oh, I guess we're not going to get to Roku tonight for some reason. We'll have to remove us off of there. It looks like, hang on, guys, I'm just fixing this. That's what happens when we produce our own show and it's live, so hang on. Let me see if we can add it again. We'll try as I'm talking. This first time this one's ever happened. So let's see what happens. We'll see if it starts streaming. If it doesn't, oh, it's working now. Anyways, welcome. I see most of you are here over here already and you'll be joining in, and it's so nice. 80% of our audience is audio only, as you've heard before if you've been here. We stream to every country in the world, all around the world. This network's been around for over 25 plus years. We stream multiple shows daily, 7 days a week. And when we're not streaming live, sorry guys, I'm just going to just get rid of this. It does not want to behave itself tonight for some reason. And it keeps flashing at me. No, go away. Go away. Thank you. It's going to flash. The first time it's ever flashed. Sorry, guys. I'm back to this. We stream multiple shows daily, 7 days a week. And when we're not streaming live, the archive server randomly picks shows over the last 25 years and streams them. So we're always live on our platforms, whether it is YouTube or we stream anywhere where podcasts and talk radio stream, including the most obscure apps to some of the biggest apps out there. You can find us. And we have something for everybody here. So if you like what you see, please like, share, and subscribe, and tell your friends and family. We always have new hosts joining the network. And there really is something for everybody here. A little bit about myself, if you haven't met me before. This is The Angel Rock, like I said. Excuse me. I am your host, Laura Lee Potvin. I'm a Canadian psychic medium. I'm also a crystal Reiki energy healer, Akashic Records practitioner, spiritual teacher, and mentor. I'm a registered nurse and a budding animal communicator, as well as I am very well versed in the near-death experience arena, having studied them professionally and personally for over 40 years, and I had one as a toddler myself. Also, what else did I want to tell you? I should write these things down, but it's really in the back of my head. It's when I get these little pop-up distractions, I lose my train of thought. Sorry, guys. That's enough about me, I think. How could I forget to tell you guys too? I'm also a host of another show on the network that I co-host with a very good friend of mine. It was just his birthday Sunday. So happy birthday to my co-host, David Hansel. And we co-host The Thing at the Foot of the Bed on Thursday nights from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here on UPRN. So thank you. We also are on TV. We should have been on TV tonight, but it's decided to mess with me. So we have our own channel on Roku, which is called, how you find it is you're going to go to the channel store and type in UFO space P as in paranormal. And excuse me, there's a drop down list. We're about the third or fourth one down, and you're looking for UFO Paranormal and United Public Radio. If you click on that, you'll see many of our shows streaming over there on the channel. And usually the Angel Rock does stream over there, but for some reason it's not playing nice. But that's what happens when we do things live. So I'm going to say hi to everybody in just a minute, but my poor guest here being so patient with my rambling opening. But before I do introduce her, how could I forget? I have to tell you guys about this. So give me 1 second. I got to get to my notes here. So come hang out with us in Thunder Bay this October 4th to 6th in 2024, where I live in Northwestern Ontario, Canada, for the Lake Superior Paranormal Convention. Tickets are available now. There's VIP Plus and there's Supernatural and VIP Pass tickets. And Lucky Paranormal, who's local here, was putting that on. They were on the show last week. And apparently over half of those tickets are sold. So you guys, you've got to come join us up here. We showed you some of the strange and unusual that goes on in this city. So it's going to be a wild time that weekend. There's going to be talks, workshops, paranormal investigation, and vendors. There'll be guest speakers, including Shane Pittman, Jeff Belanger, our own Carrie Lynn Shellhorn from UPRN. And she has an amazing show here on Fridays, Spirit Switchboard from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And let's see what else we got here. Hang on. She's also been giving a special Sunday edition of her Spirits and Sweets, where she's going to be getting messages from Spirit. She's an incredible medium as well as paranormal investigator. Investigator, The Travel Channel's Beyond the Haunting. We've got Chris Rutkowski. He's going to be doing things, talk around UFOs and Bigfoot. Dee McCauley from Dark History. He's local. The Winnipeg Paranormal Group, and so many more, including myself. I will be giving a talk there as well. It's going to be all about all kinds of things spooky. I also will have a table there, so I'm going to be selling some of my resin work and stuff. And I did talk to the girls that were on last week, Mel and Gail Willis. I'm hopefully crossing my fingers that they might be able to make it work and stream it live. So people like over in Sri Lanka and Australia, we've got people from the States, we've got people from all over the place, that you too can be a part of this. So the only place you have to go to get the tickets is Lake Superior Paracon. Thank you so much, Nikki, for being so patient. Hang on, I just got to read your bio here because you have quite the illustrious biography. So hang on. Of course, I moved it. So give me one sec here. This is where we're going to go instead. You know what? Nothing wants to cooperate with me tonight. I think we're going to have one of those nights tonight. Give me one second. So who we have here, I forgot, and please forgive me if I end up, Nikki, pronouncing your last name incorrectly. I got your first name, but I didn't get your last name. So I know where to find this. Of course, I have everything organized, and then it just goes and runs wherever it wants to, because I've got so many different things on the go right now. So Nicole, or she also goes by Nikki Goot, is from South Africa, but moved to the U.S. at 24 years old, following an inner call to discover her dharma. She's a writer, facilitator, experienced yoga teacher, a multidisciplined healer, and spiritual mentor. And we're going to be chatting about her newest book, Yoga and the Five Elements, and much more. Welcome, Nikki. It's so nice to have you here.
Thank you, Laura Lee. I'm so pleased to be here. And, you know, I'm not signed up for the chat window, but I can see some of the comments, and you've clearly got a community of wonderful people who are very welcoming. So hi to everyone. I may not be able to reply in the chat window, but I am seeing your comments. So thanks, and I'm happy to be here.
So yeah, it's a little bit different here. Yeah, you can't post on here. So that's the thing I forgot to mention to people as I got distracted with a few little interruptions. If you are listening and you want to join the conversation, where you're going to go is to UFO Paranormal and United Public Radio on Facebook and YouTube. You can go to my YouTube channel, which is the Angel Rock with Laura Lee Potvin. I'm streaming it on Instagram on the Angel Rock. I can't see your comments over there. They're not playing nice over there just yet with StreamYard. So I'll try and pop back and forth to see your comments. We're on Canada's Most Haunted. We're all over the place on social media between Facebook and YouTube. So head over there and then we'll be able to see your comments. Okay. So what we do is we're going to highlight them like this. I don't usually with the highs, but we've got Z Sun Dragon. That's Kevin. He's a fellow Canadian. He says hi, but I know there's going to be others. We've got Diane Brighton. Hi to everybody there. Let's see who else we got here. He says, how long before we fall off the bed? I don't know what that. Oh, he's talking about the thing at the foot of the bed. We got Jonathan Keyworth here. I was just on his new podcast on Friday night. We had lots of fun. We got Cindy Simpson. We got Michelle Plummer. Julie Jean Bassett says, hello, Laura Lee and everyone. She says, can't stay long, but I thought I'd drop by to say hi. We're glad to have everybody that says hello here. Who else? Everybody's saying hi. Like you said, you can see the comments. So if you see something, just shout it out. Hi, Kathy Hanley Little. Yeah, so that's kind of how it works. I guess you go on podcast, but it sounds like this might be your first experience with StreamYard.
I think I've been on StreamYard before, but this works just a little differently. Like I was saying before, I think everybody seems to have a slightly different setup and also different in terms of how their community is interactive. So this is definitely the more interactive community that I'm speaking with tonight.
Well, what I always say is, okay, so maybe it's the Leo in me. I'm not a big astrologist, but I understand a bit about it. But the thing is, I hate when I go to somebody's live and I'm really interested in what they're saying and I've got some questions or whatever it may be, and they don't even look at their chat. I understand if it's really flying by and you can barely see it. Well, you can't expect anybody to read it that quickly. So I always feel that if people are spending their time with us, the least we can do is involve their comments and their questions. And we have such an intelligent, well-versed audience that shows up here. They really ask some great comments and they've become almost like a little family here between the two shows. So it's so nice. The other thing I want to tell my audience that I forgot my distractions here. Don't forget that we are streaming on 105.3 out of Mississippi and 107.7 FM out of New Orleans. I didn't want to forget to say that. So that's an interesting background that you've got. When I saw your bio, because we booked this a long time ago, I was looking and I thought, South Africa, one of my favorite YouTubers, because a lot of us in not so much lightworker world, but the paranormal world seem to follow true crime. And one of my favorite true crimers is on YouTube, and her name is Gisela Kay, and she's got Grizzly True Crime, and she's from South Africa. Was living in the Netherlands and now she lives in Switzerland. So as soon as I saw that, but you're no longer in South Africa. You came over to the US at the age of 24.
I did. And so it's been 20 years. This is home. Mm-hmm. Well, I say I'm going home when I'm going to South Africa, and I say I'm coming home when I'm coming back to the United States. So I have, multiple homes at this point. And in a sense, I think of myself as, wherever my home is, where I feel myself rooted and grounded, which, is in two places, but really anywhere, I think.
Well, the funny part is, because a lot of my guests, just like yourself, because we got to give a shout out to Gavin Lee Davies, who sends me these wonderful authors like yourself. And I had one on, I think he's coming back on next month, actually. And we were talking, and 2 minutes before we went live, he's over in Australia. He's been there for 40 years. He's a lawyer. And he had said that, I think he said he got a citizenship in Australia. But I said to him, somehow in his biography, he had mentioned he had come from Canada. And then he goes, yeah, I'm from Thunder Bay. I live in such a small city in Thunder Bay in the middle of Canada on the Great Lake of Lake Superior. I'm about 40 minutes away from the Minnesota border, and I'm about 6 hours or so north of Minneapolis, Minnesota. There's 100,000 people. Like, what are the chances of that happening?
I think that's the magic of the universe is, these synchronicities and the interconnections, that the world is a lot smaller than we sometimes think it is. And sometimes the universe just reminds us that there are these magical moments and that we are, all interconnected.
Well, we really are. And I loved in your biography that you'd mentioned that I won't word it quite as well as it was written, but you were following your dharma to come to the US. Can you explain to people what that is? Because with having people from all over the world, mm-hmm. We forget in our little community with light working and stuff that we've got our terminology, and other people are going, what the heck is that? So what is that for people?
I think that's a great question. Dharma comes from Sanskrit, and there's not really an equivalent translation, but the best way I could put it is it's your path in life, your life purpose, which is actually a much more kind of broad or large encompassing term for the path we take in life. And so for me, the story of finding my life purpose or my path in life kind of goes way back to when I was very small. I often tell this, I'm asked, well, how did you end up in the United States? And what was the reason you left South Africa? And when I talk about, following this call, it goes back to when I was 3 years old. Wow. And I have this very vivid memory of sitting in the sandbox. Okay. And looking around myself and seeing all these other kids playing around me and thinking, where am I? I want to go home. And then, who am I? And what is this place? Now, I'm 3 years old, and these are very, let's say, adult questions.
Deep but questions.
Deep, but and also adult. You know, at three, we're still developing the ego and the personality and coming mm-hmm. into that conscious connection between the soul and the personality. And so as I got older, I was following this call to answer that question, who am I? Now, I'm sure many people, many of your listeners have perhaps asked that question of themselves, who am I? And, you know, for me, that just could, you know, continue to get stronger and stronger. And so by the time I was, you know, a teenager and I had started already investigating spirituality, the world of spirit, trying to figure out how to answer those questions, I was beginning to step onto that path to figuring out who I am and what it is that I'm here to do in the world. What's my function? And I knew inside that I needed to be somewhere else, and South Africa was not the place. So for me, leaving was about following that knowing, this deep, it was like a deep trust. There was no doubt. It wasn't even a question that I had to be somewhere else. I didn't know where. And truthfully, the where could have been anywhere. But when I was 19, I had the opportunity to travel. I'd saved some money. My parents helped me. And I got on a plane to visit some friends and family in kind of different places. I came to Vancouver. I came to parts of the United States. And something about, and I actually up until about 3 years ago lived in Boston, Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. I now live in New Hampshire. Something about that city spoke to me. Something called me, and that's where I sort of landed. That's where I navigated to, and from making that decision, everything else just started to open up. The studies that I've done, the people that I've met, just how I've opened up and discovered for myself who I am. That's been, you know, an evolving process over the last, you know, 20, well, more actually, but 20 years since I've lived here, certainly a lot longer since I've been on that journey.
But don't you think, backing up a little bit to being 3 years old, because I'm going to be 59 in August, and I remember, you know, having conversations when I was supposed to be sleeping. I've always been a night hawk, and probably 3 or 4 years old, I now know it was my guides, you know, telling me about the children I would be having. And, you know, this name I've always heard that I had no idea what it was. I do know what the name is now. But the reason I say that, those were very deep thoughts and adult for a child. But my thoughts are, and it could be wrong, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this just quickly, is I think as children, we come from source, right? I believe we're everlasting beings, and some people don't, and that's okay, but I think we are. And that we never really die. We have multiple lives, because I've really studied this with children, especially too, that remember their past lives. And it's just utterly fascinating. But, and I've really looked at it. We talked a little bit about it last Thursday, actually, on the thing at the foot of the bed, but we were pulling up a few clips of children that could see spirit or see a grandparent or somebody around them that had passed, including a little one going to her mother's gravesite. She could barely walk, let alone talk. And you could see her leaning up to give a kiss and waving bye-bye. But my whole point is, I feel like it's almost, we're closer to where we've come from, meaning I call it home, source, whatever people want to call where we come from, right? Yeah. To whereas when we get older, we tend to forget who we are. And it almost sounds like you were almost having a, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but almost a remembrance of like, where did, who am I? Like, why am I here? What's going on? And then it almost sounds like that inner knowing stayed with you. Would that be a correct way to describe that? Or does that resonate in any way? Or
absolutely. And I love the word that you used, remembering. So mm-hmm. a term that I use is self-remembering. Mm-hmm. And self being the substrate consciousness, the very essence of our being, And I take my worldview happens to be one that we reincarnate. So it's a reincarnational, multidimensional, multi-life point of view. Mm-hmm. But that reincarnational self goes through successive lifetimes. And in that evolutionary process, each lifetime we come back, we have to remember the self that we were, and not like in the physical details, like, okay, I'm going to open a book and I'm going to recount, you know, all, everything off the page. But really what we're bringing back is this kind of energy and information of who we were and what we learned, and re-remembering that as we then sort of pick up, so to speak, where we left off and continue on the journey. And so in a sense, what we are doing is remembering the self of who we are, because each lifetime we inhabit, my point of view or my understanding is that we take on a new personality ego, so a new veil. And through that lens, we experience reality with a new set of lessons, a new set of challenges. 100%. And that adds to the storehouse, so to speak, of who we are and what we're becoming as we contribute, you know, in our interconnectedness with one another. We all add to the library of consciousness. So I agree.
I resonate with everything you are saying there and agree 100%. But I know with working with people, as I know you do, because I can literally hear this coming from people that are either going to be hearing the replay or listening now. How did you know? How did you do this? How did you find out what your path is? I'm getting goosebumps, my sign for truth. Because my point is, and I'm asking you for our audience, because
sure,
the bulk of people that come to me for a reading, or whether it's healing or whatever it is, and they'll say, I don't know what I'm here for. I just had this conversation recently with a client, and I always say to people, it's not, I will never tell you what your life purpose is. That is for you to discover. I'm here to help you, if you're open to it, to guiding you to discovering what that is, or if you will, and I love that, re-remembering, why are you here, right? What are you here? And the thing that you just said too, when you moved from South Africa, you had this inner knowing, or I almost call it claircognizance. We know that we know, but we don't know why we know it, but we know it to the depth of our core.
Sure.
And then everything seems to fall into place when we're on the right path. Would you agree?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So I just want to name what's happening for me. You talk about getting goosebumps for recognizing a truth. And for me, it's tears. So that's my sort of signal that I'm recognizing that we're touching on, you know, an essential kind of core truth. So I just wanted to name that so that as people kind of watching see.
I'm glad that you did. Thank you.
So the question you asked, how did I know, or how did I do this? Well, it wasn't easy and it wasn't a straight road. I'll say that. So even though I had this memory, as a young child, you know, as we develop, you know, we have imprinting from parents, from family, from society, what you could sort of umbrella call social and family conditioning. Mm-hmm. And that imprinting can sometimes tamp down some of those intuitions, those knowings. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a process that we go through of kind of swimming through some of that to sort of peel back the layers and self-remember, rediscover who we are. So that's why I say the road wasn't necessarily straight. I was sort of still figuring out, okay, what's the direction? And quite specifically, you know, I thought I wanted to study architecture when I was a kid, because I always loved drawing and I loved buildings. I mean, I still do. Mm-hmm. And my husband's family are practically all architects. So that stayed in my life in some capacity. But So what I thought I was, or what I thought I wanted to do, was not the path.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know this at the time, but when I was 20, I was involved in a serious car accident with a couple other family members. And the analogy I'll use for this is something I heard someone else describe at a workshop some years ago, is that sometimes the universe takes a 2x4 and hits you on the head when it's trying to get you to wake up and listen to a message.
Uh-huh.
And that was this car accident. It was literally the universe saying, this is not the route you're supposed to be taking. So I had decided not to study architecture. Mm-hmm. And I really didn't know what I wanted to do. And it was, so I kind of studied business and finance and industrial psychology. And I was working in a bank. And the universe was saying, this is not you. This is not the path for you. And it took me a long time to hear that message. But what the car accident did was it awakened in me this desire to search, and that was searching for healing. And so the modalities that I studied were kind of tools that were not only for my own self-healing, but to also self-remember, to wake up to my path, what I was meant to do. And so what I've learned is that the form is not important. The form is just the container for bringing through the energy of who you are.
Absolutely.
And it can literally be anything. So if you're hearing this message, know that whatever form you choose, it's just a form. It could be anything. It's your way of bringing into the world yourself. So we live in a world that's very much identity based. You know, what's your job? What's your, you know, where do you live? All the things that we think define us. And it can be very easy to get stuck in those identity forms, those labels.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of love something that I've noticed in recent years, a kind of a renaissance of the term craftsperson.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've had this conversation off air many times.
And I think it's so interesting because what craftsperson does is it becomes an umbrella for recognizing that there's a whole variety of forms. You could be doing pottery, ceramics, woodwork, you know, carpentry and so forth. So ultimately the form just takes the form it needs to. So coming back to your question, how did I do it? It was a long way. It was a long journey. It was a process of taking step by step, of finding the things that resonated, the different mm-hmm. modalities, and seeing how those awoke in me what the things were that I needed, and finding teachers and mentors that could guide me until I could find that teacher within.
I like that, because the reason why I asked you, because for people, it's really hard for them to understand to even recognize, because there's so many people, and I don't say this with an elitist energy or an egotistical energy, right? And there really is no right or wrong answers when we come here. I believe that, right? We can come here and screw it all up if for the reason we set out to come here for. I usually find that that's when life isn't very easy for people, because it's like the universe or whatever you want to call it. It's first it nudges to get you towards you where you've chosen to go, and then gives you a little bit of a push. And sometimes you get a hit over the head, like mm-hmm. a car accident. For me, I had a patient cover a rug with a hole with a rug when I worked out in the community, and I fell through and shattered all my discs. Mm-hmm. And I never, ever, I thought I was going to be a doctor, and I never, ever expected I'd be doing what I'm doing now. So then I was off permanently, and I still hadn't navigated to where I was going. I was kind of inching there. And it was like my paranormal experience that we had in our previous home was so crazy, but it really pushed me into looking at the universe. Never chose for me what I needed to do. It was like it just gave me that here you go, take a look. Mm-hmm. Right? So you got into all this healing, and the thing that, like, there's so many things I wanted to ask you about all these healing modalities. We've got a few people in here talking about some health challenges they're having within the chat too. Mm-hmm. So, but one thing, there's a few things you do I want to ask you about, and I'm going to save the yoga to last. But one of the things I've heard a lot about, I'd love to hear why you got into craniosacral healing, why you got into that, and how, what that is for people that don't understand about it.
It's interesting. It's not a modality I practice specifically or on its own today. Like I was saying before, you know, there were a number of modalities that I picked up.
The steps
that helped me in this sort of awakening. Mm-hmm. But specifically, biodynamic cranial sacral therapy, and there are really two schools of thought, but essentially the idea is that with craniosacral therapy is you as the practitioner are facilitating, mm-hmm. or holding the space for the person that you're working with, for the person to enter into a safe space where the body can restore itself to its natural state, for the mm-hmm. body to heal itself. And essentially what you're feeling into, and I just want to repeat that again, what you're feeling into, so not thinking into, feeling into, you're using a different sense, is you're feeling into the breath of life, or what's called the breath of life in craniosacral therapy. And it's like it's a rhythm, it's a cranial rhythm that flows in the body. And you can become quite sensitive to this in the body. And you can see I'm moving my hands. So for those of you who aren't watching but listening, I'm sort of holding my hands and as if I was rocking my hand side to side, because that's sort of what you're feeling into, is this rhythm that's in the body. And that breath of life is understood to be kind of an essential blueprint, that when we restore healing, we're restoring that blueprint, that natural rhythm. And that when there's a blockage, and you could say that really a lot about many modalities that work with energy and healing, is to look at where's the blockage. Cindy, yes. Did that, Cindy Dale's book.
Yes. Yes. Secret Language of Your Body. I sing with no disrespect. That's one of my Bibles that I work with in my field.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I remember reading that some time ago. Mm-hmm. So yeah, the same idea is you're unblocking something that's stuck. Mm-hmm. And helping to restore that natural flow, that natural rhythm once again. So it's a very minimally, it's very minimally invasive. You've got the lightest of touch. And the way I was taught is if you take a quarter, or in American currency, a quarter, I'm not quite sure what be the equivalent in Canadian currency.
We have
been a while since I've been to Canada.
Our money's the same, but it's colored except for the silver. We don't have pennies anymore either.
Okay. So, you know, you're using about the same amount of pressure as if you had to put a quarter in your hand.
Okay.
So that's very, very light. I mean, it's barely touching. And there are specific points on the body that you work with. The head in particular, so hence the cranial rhythm, but also areas like the shoulders, the hips, the knees, and the feet.
Okay.
And more often than not, at least in my experience, most people tend to drift, and you kind of drift, or what's called like a low tide. You kind of, you know, the tide stretches out, where if you've ever had the experience of being in a healing session, for me it's particular with body work, where it's sort of like when you've just waking up from sleep you're in this liminal space. You're not quite
call it the zone in our field, the hypnagogic state, okay, or the zone, right? Best place to connect to spirit or your guides, or I hear you.
Yeah, you're not quite asleep. You're not quite awake. Yeah, awake. Your consciousness. You're in this liminal space. And that's often the place you kind of get into. And that's, you know, some of where there's some deep healing. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Sorry, I was reading a comment. I hear you. Okay. Sorry, I was reading. I got lost in this. They're all having a comment about the pennies versus, and I was listening to you too. And then you stopped. I went, oh, okay.
I made the mistake of looking over to see what people were saying.
That's what I was doing. I was looking, going, oh my goodness, because people are talking about all kinds. I love when they chat amongst themselves. And Debbie Schmoly's here. Hi, Debbie Schmoly. We've got M. Lyons here. Julie Jean Bassett has to leave. She said, thank you, though. And quite a few comments here, but we will get to them. We're here to, I want to talk about your book, but I wanted to kind of get into a few things because this is something I don't know a ton about. It has really been suggested to me, and I'm feeling that calling within my soul, and it's yoga. So I want to hear, how did you get into yoga? And I mean, you've written a book about yoga and the five elements. I got to hear all about this. So how'd you get into yoga?
Yoga for me started actually through architecture.
Wow. That's okay. Mind-blowing.
So here I am, this sort of 13, 14 year old. I'm interested in buildings, and mm-hmm. I still love going to the bookstore, and I'd go to the bookstore and I'd often look at books on architecture and buildings and design. And I happened to one day stumble across a book called Vastu, spelled V-A-A-S-T-U.
Yep.
And it's about the placement, sacred geometry, placement in design, and working with energies, not dissimilar to feng shui. And in the book, it talked about Ayurveda, and Ayurveda is the natural healing, allopathic healing system that comes from Indian philosophy, Vedanta in India. Mm-hmm. And that opened a whole new sort of dimension for me of, wow, what is this? What's this healing system talking about, you know, the elements, talking about recognizing your dosha or recognizing imbalance and balance and working with the body and the mind. So that was my entree into yoga, was actually through Ayurveda, through an allopathic system of healing. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until, gosh, probably 19 or 20 when I first experienced the postural practice of yoga, what I think many people in the world today think of as yoga. I'm going to generalize, okay, for those who are listening. I think what many people are often exposed to is through the body first, and what I think of as a postural practice.
Okay.
In addition to the inner practices of yoga, working with the mind and the body, but from within, as opposed to coming to the body first.
You're the first person I've heard say that, and I love what you're saying. I really do, because it isn't just a physical experience, is it?
No, and I think for me, part of the impetus for the book, I think, came from a place of wanting to expose people to the idea that yoga is, that there is more. That the postural practice is a dimension. It's one way of working with energy, working with balance, working with coming into unity with your mind, body, and spirit. For those individuals who are interested in going deeper, because I think what happens is, you know, you start to develop an opening. You know, we're working with a lot of energy channels in the body. Yoga opens up a lot of these dimensions physically, and that can open a lot of questions, right?
Because my cat's putting her tail on this one. Guys, I'm so sorry.
Live That's show. Okay.
animals have decided. I don't know if we're getting a new moon or what, but my everything tonight. I'm so sorry.
I'm not an astrologer by any stretch of the imagination.
Neither am I. Not
even Mercury retrograde. And I will say, for me, for Mercury retrograde, things do tend to work backwards. So
I don't know because my dog just decided. She thinks she's a lap dog. My cat just wandered on and she's put her tail across the screen. And both these animals are very psychically connected, though. They really, really are. And I'm not getting into the woo-woo world. Julie Jean Bassett, who was in the chat that had to run, is a shamanic practitioner, incredible healer. I've worked, gone to her actually for a few sessions, and she's helped me with two of my animals. But she has said she's never met an animal is psychically connected to the universe as my dog. And I jokingly said, well, look who her mother is. just your mother does psychic work and look what happens. Anyways, let's get back to what we're talking about. Sorry.
No, that's okay.
We're talking about the inner, like connecting from within, that instead of just getting into the postural.
So I think what I was saying about the body is, you know, the somatic experience. So one of the ways I think about energy manifesting, and I relate this a little bit in the book, Yoga and the Five Elements, is that we manifest into physical form and eventually we come into the physical body. And there are all these energies, the subtle bodies and the five elements.
Can you tell us what the five elements are for people, though, so they know sure. what you're referring to?
So I work with the five elements as, let's start from the bottom up. So earth, water, air, fire, and space. Each element relates to one of the subtle bodies. Okay. And the subtle bodies are, so earth relates to the etheric body.
Love it. Okay.
Water relates to the astral body, which is the body of emotions, the body of dreams. Air relates to the mental body. So the mental body is all about beliefs and air is about perspective. Fire and the causal body. Fire is illumination and transformation and motivation and enthusiasm. And that's the level of life purpose. And then we have the element of space, which is the Buddhic body, and that's the body that's beyond time and space, where we start to realize the experience of unity consciousness, where we start to feel that interdependence and interconnectedness with everything and everyone.
Do you think that's possible to achieve, being in this earthly plane? I mean, I guess individually it could be if you put in the work, right? And really were dedicated, or would I be wrong about that? Because that would be really difficult, I would find, to be able to achieve that on this earthly plane. Or am I wrong about that?
You mean to be interconnected or to feel?
No, not so much that, but okay, with the Buddhic body, not the interconnectedness, but the other things you were saying as a human being. Is that possible, or would it be for somebody that's, say, a very old soul and has a lot of wisdom and a lot of knowledge? I want to hear more about that, I guess, rather than assuming. I'd love to hear more about that if it's possible.
Say more about what you mean, what's possible. Is it possible to experience these levels, or is it possible?
All of them are possible, I think 100%. But the last that you said, because I'm not familiar with, you said the Buddhist, was it the
Buddhic?
Buddhic body. Okay. And what you were saying about it, and it's not that I'm disbelieving anyway, I'm super intrigued by it, because to me, could I do it on an individual level? Yes. But I would think you would have to be super healed, super grounded, very old soul with a lot of wisdom and knowledge and things like that. Because I don't know, like, I want to hear more about this level, I guess, because, and I'm not discounting it in any way. I'm really intrigued by it.
Sure. Okay. I think
the world would be a lot better place if we could all reach that level, is where I'm going with this.
I think I understand where you're coming from, Loralee. So the bodies, let's back up for a second. Okay. So in yoga in Five Elements, the book, I use the terminology I'm using with a subtle body comes from theosophy. Okay. If those, there are listeners who are saying, okay, well in yoga, what is, how does that relate to the, how does that relate to yoga? That is the, what's called a kosha or a sheath. And those are things like pranamaya kosha, prana, life force, energy.
Yep.
And so the bodies are, vehicles for consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we were talking at the very beginning about that reincarnational self.
Yeah.
Right? That's the energy that comes through. And if we had to think about it, how does that reincarnational self communicate and experience physical reality? Well, one is through a physical body, but there are also other levels of being. And I'm guessing a lot of your listeners are familiar with whether we call it the human energy field or an aura. So essentially the bodies are just multiple layers of that human energy field. And each of those layers represents levels at which we are able to bring through the energy of the soul into physical reality. So for example, when we're talking about the astral body and emotions. So our, you know, if we had to look in our mind, you know, happiness isn't like a physical thing that exists in the mind, right? It's not like a physical, I can touch and feel and see it.
That's right? A concept that's difficult for a lot of people though.
Sure.
Right? Why people get so disillusioned because they do think it's a physical thing, right? If I get the latest this, the latest that, the latest this, and it's almost like it's a high and then it's gone. And then they wonder why they feel empty and would mm-hmm. I be wrong? And it's not said with judgment. It's just an observation. So I love what you said about that, about happiness.
You're right. That's what I call the sensory mind,
mm-hmm.
right? The sensory mind either goes into, you know, desire and craving. I want this, the next thing, or fear and aversion. I don't want that. That's too much. And, you know, it's a lot of often back and forth and it can be quite binary. Mm-hmm. And the trick, so to speak, is to be able to step back out of the binary mm-hmm. and to find the middle. And so part of why it's helpful to understand the subtle bodies, these subtle layers, is that it enables us to understand that these are just vehicles and mechanisms for us to be learning and growing, for consciousness to experience physical reality. And that one of those mechanisms is through the subtle bodies and through the ego personality.
Mm-hmm.
So again, back to what we were saying earlier about identity and form, right? With life purpose. Once you start to realize that you are not just your body and you're not your emotions, you're not your thoughts, these things don't define you. There's an opening to a much larger sense of self. And to your question of, is it possible to do this in a lifetime? Do you have to be in a particular place?
Mm-hmm.
It is possible. And what we have to understand is that it's a spectrum, right? There isn't this particular endpoint or goal. And I'm particular about not using the word goal, because goal often places a particular pressure almost that you have to have achieved something by a particular stage. And, you know, when we're talking about spiritual development and spiritual growth, it really is an evolution. And where you are is where you are. And the next step that you take in your journey is the next step that you take. And so is it possible to experience and open to these?
Anything is possible, but what I'm thinking is, and I'm not trying to put limits on this, to me, to be able to maybe I didn't word it properly, but even on a bigger scale, if you will, because individually, anything is possible. And I am one of those people that believes that if you're willing, like how powerful our minds are and our words and our thoughts, right? With everything being energy, but our minds are so incredibly powerful. We have never been led to believe or understand how incredibly powerful our minds are. So on an individual level, if somebody took upon this and was drawn to it as yourself, and you're speaking my language, a lot of things you're saying, but for somebody that is feeling really lost, for example, and doesn't feel like they belong or is wondering why they're here or, you know, at a crossroads, could they get to that individually, all of these stages? Yes. But I guess I'm thinking en masse in a group, if you will, because to me, that almost sounds like it would be ethereal is what I was trying to ask is, could we achieve that state when we go, as I call it, back home? Absolutely. Because there's nothing but love. But to me, it almost sounded like you would have to be in a real place of balance, peace, love, grounded, and understand all these concepts. So I'm just trying to explain myself because I'd love to hear your thoughts. Am I wrong about this? Am I way off base? Or
let me pause for a moment just to take in what you're saying.
I ask difficult questions because my mind goes there. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. It's. I'm just feeling into what you're saying, and pausing before I, you know, respond.
I could reword it. Okay, no, so say. Because no, I want people to buy your book. I think it's amazing. And everything you're talking, like you're speaking my language. And I'm not saying this is impossible. I'm just wondering, how does one get there maybe? Like, how do they do that? Because I guess where I look at it is maybe I'm being judgmental with humanity, but I don't know. I haven't seen many people be there. Mind you, I haven't traveled all over the world. Maybe there's many people that are already there because I just think the world would be in such a better place if we were able to incorporate what you're talking about with these five elements and especially the final one that you mentioned. That's why I'm wondering, could it be possible with humanity, if you will?
The best way I can answer that question is...
I'm just curious, that's all. And if you can't even answer it, it's okay.
That's why we're here. We're in a conversation and exploring. You know, the way I think of the universe we find ourselves in is that it's based on a number of, we could call them universal principles.
Absolutely.
And one of them is that we're in a system of learning and growth. Excuse me. Very simply.
Yeah.
And if you think about it, and sort of make the thought experiment, there's, you know, it's sort of, and if you take a reincarnational point of view, we can see that a soul is constantly evolving and constantly learning. And so by that measure, if we're in a system that's based on the principle of learning and growth, all you can ever do is take one step at a time.
Agreed.
Put one foot in front of the other. And each person is doing the same thing as well. And we're not all at the same stage of development as each other.
Agreed.
Which means that where we are, each person, is what you've self-remembered and what you can see in someone else as, well, why can't they get there? Or I wish they could get there, is a recognition of what you've self-remembered, but they haven't. And so what we start to become is beacons for one another to help each other kind of rise up, to be lifted up and for ourselves to lift others. And so as we ourselves become more awake and aware, we have a duty, a service to ourselves and to humanity to share that. And I don't mean that you have to go out and to teach or to do healing. It can be as simple as you help your neighbor next door with something. You smile at the person across the street. It's the little things, right? Mm-hmm. It's being open and aware enough to be awake to that. And that becomes an invitation to others to step up to a higher way of being if they want and if they're ready. And that's the key, is that we can never demand of anyone else.
Agreed 100% and say it all the time. The only thing you can change is yourself, should you choose to.
Right. And mm-hmm. So is it possible? It's possible in the sense on the larger scale of humanity evolving, right?
Okay, I hear you. I hear you.
So what we're talking about is evolutionary. And so if we look at what's available to us, you know, everybody who's involved in this community is interested in what's out there, asking questions, mm-hmm. right? Is there's signposts all over the place, and those signposts are the beacons that let us know, okay, you're going in the right direction. And so any message, any book, anything that is anything that helps us, you know, step up to a higher way of being that helps us and helps others be uplifted is really that signpost. So, you know, again, thinking about it evolutionary terms is we're all just taking that next step closer to ourselves and closer to the source of all being.
You answered that beautifully, and I'm sorry, I didn't mean to make it so difficult. To
no,
me,
not at all.
It sounded like nirvana or heaven or what people's idea would be of it. Do I disbelieve it? No. But I know there'll be people hearing this going, where can I be around more people like that? And I think you've answered it. And I agree absolutely 100% with everything you have said. Like, it seems over the last month, especially with the different people, like we work with different people, right? Like different clients. And, you know, people will say exactly what you gave us such a beautiful example. And somebody I highlighted had said, you just said it so beautifully. So people are enjoying what you're talking, the way you're speaking and how you're sharing your message. So thank you. But I've said always one thing. First of all, what we perceive becomes what we believe, and it becomes our reality. That was from spirit. But I also say to others that feel very frustrated, and you said it much more eloquently than I did, right? We can see something within someone else or the potential or whatever it is. And we think, well, why can't they just do it? Or why can't they whatever? And I found myself saying more and more lately in sessions is, again, the only thing we can do is change ourselves. If we choose, but also it's always so easy to stand on the outside mm-hmm. and very clearly see what the issue is around somebody else. But it's when we have to hold that proverbial mirror up to our own face and have the courage and the desire and the objectivity to step back and say, this needs healing, or maybe this needs work. Do you see what I'm saying? Like how, what you were saying? So how could they apply your book to that kind of principle?
Great question. And I think this will make sense to you too, being as a nurse practitioner as well, is, you know, we talk about compassion, but one of the elements of compassion is empathy. Empathy is, let's use this analogy. If you were to stand in front of a painting, mm-hmm. right? On the outside, you can just observe the painting. You can just, you know, you can look at it. You can see what the image is, the colors, etc. That's observing, right. Hopefully without judgment.
As I always try to add, I'm not in a place of judgment, just observation.
Empathy takes it a step further and steps into the painting and has the experience of the landscape, mm-hmm. right? What the colors actually feel like, how saturated they are, what the palette of the colors is, what the landscape and the story is telling you from within the painting, what the painter was feeling when they painted the painting. So empathy is being able to step into and feel another person's experience. Mm-hmm. And I say that also with the caveat of empathy doesn't mean step in and then be in the soup, right? You know, step in and to feel into what the other person is experiencing, but don't take it on. And one of Buddha's great teachings is don't take away my suffering. And what he meant by that was my suffering or my lessons are mine. They're not yours to do for me. And so what we're doing with empathy is really feeling into someone else's experience and having compassion. So understanding where they are and how they got to where they are. And not trying to fix or to change, but to sit in the awareness that, okay, this is what they're going through. And I can understand that from a human place, from a soul to soul place. And I can offer to help. I can offer, whether that's to listen, whether that's something I actually have that I can give, physically, time. Time's an irreplaceable resource. It's not, you know, not infinite in terms of our lifetime that we're in. So in terms of how we can apply this sort of evolutionary growth that we're on with one another is to have empathy, right? But not trying to force upon or fix or change anyone, but to really offer an invitation of I'm here, I can help if you need, but I can see the experience you're having and I can understand that that is what you're going through without judgment.
I just thought the way that you explained that, because I love the way that you explained empathy, because you're absolutely right. And that's the big thing, right? You know, and you'll see people say, well, this person that I have in my life is absolutely perfect. If only they would change this and change that or change this, or somebody that's going through something, right? Somebody will step in being very well-meaning and take over. Instead of exactly what you said, observing it, understanding from a perspective, yes, I can see what you're going through. The other thing that I thought that you said was important, not getting drawn into it, being an observer, being a supportive, offering help should they choose to take it. And I always like to add to come from a place of love. Like, let's use a patient, for example, that I did very passionate about death and dying in the home. And if I can ever go back to work one day, it's a terrible name, but I would love to work in the death doula field and to be able to support and be there and really feel that pain that family is going through and your patient is going through, but you being there to support the family, support your patient, but not getting drawn into it, but having deep, deep compassion and empathy for what they're going through. So I just love the way that you explained that, because sometimes I think people can misconstrue what it means to have empathy. Like, there's a lot of empathetic people, don't get me wrong, but a lot of people get drawn into it or how can I fix it?
Mm-hmm. I think another component of empathy in terms of or related to not fixing is to realize that everybody has a different experience of the world. Everybody's worldview is different and it's their view. It's, you know, and a view is just a view. It's the beliefs that you hold. And I think you said it a moment ago, I'll say it in my own words, but it's very similar, is, you know, our thoughts create our reality. So,
absolutely.
So what your thoughts are and your intentions, from your words to your deeds, that all manifests and becomes the physical reality that you experience. And so whatever someone else is going through, we have to understand that it's related to, aside from whatever they believe, whatever their karma is, right? And when I say karma, I mean, what is the cause and effect relationship in their life based on whether it's from a past life, and not always, but what are the what are the conditions under which they're learning and growing in this lifetime, in that particular moment in time when you're meeting them. So, you know, empathy also holds that into, takes that into account. What is this person's point of view? What are their beliefs? What are their values? What are their blind spots? What can they or can't they see in the reality that they're creating for themselves? What is their karma? It's quite large when we think about someone's life. We never know what someone else's experience is like.
I always say that because you just get the end product when you have the experience, especially say even with somebody you don't know very well. Mm-hmm. And say you go to a store and the person at the cash register is really nasty to you, right? And our first thing we do is jump at, oh my gosh, how dare you be so rude? And yet, you know, we don't know. For all we know, this poor cashier, maybe she's going through a divorce, or he, or maybe they are, you know, they just lost the love of their life, or a parent. Or my point is, we don't know what people experience. We just get what we get in the moment when we experience them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I love this. I love telling this parable. I came across it years ago. It was told to me actually in a training course I was attending having to do with craniosacral therapy. And I'm sure it's been paraphrased 100 times, but it goes something like this. A man wakes up in the morning, gets out of bed, gets dressed, does his routine, goes downstairs, walks out the front door, and falls in a hole. The next day, the man wakes up in the morning, gets dressed, does his morning routine, goes down the stairs, walks out the door, and again falls in the hole. And this repeats over and over and over again. Until one day he wakes up, he goes down the stairs, he walks out the door, and he sees the hole, but then he falls in. And again, you know, it happens again and again. He sees the hole, but he still manages to fall in. Somehow he does. And eventually, one day he wakes up, he walks down the street, he sees the hole, and he takes a different turn.
Finally.
Mm-hmm. Finally. And really the parable is about the habits, you know, habits of being, right? We, our own actions in life that we keep repeating over and over again, the cycle that we're in, the cause and effect relationship, the karma that we create, that we're in over and over and over again, until eventually we can see it, but we're not yet at a stage, once we can recognize it, we're still not yet at the stage of being able to necessarily completely change it, because we're just in the stage of recognizing it. And this kind of touches on a question you had earlier of how do we do this? Is it possible? You know, is we eventually recognize the patterns, the habits, and then we start to make those changes, whatever tools we have, we start to bring in, you know, remembering that help is available. So finding the support and bringing that in and making those changes until eventually the patterns aren't there anymore. We've chosen a different path. We've changed the pattern. We've changed the circle.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to read Z Sundragon's comment, or Kevin. He said, listening to Nicole and Laura Lee's perspectives is my main focus here. Otherwise, we're not going to pay attention to that right now. The chat is getting a little bit off. We appreciate everybody that's here. So if you do want to be here, there's a lot of people like to participate in the conversation and add their perspectives. So I realize there's somebody in here that's going off on all kinds of tangents, and you're more than welcome, but please leave space and room for others to put their comments so we can add them up here too. Okay, we appreciate people's viewpoints, but we're here to support our guest, Nicole, too. So if you've got questions or comments for her, we would love to see those, okay? And I appreciate your views that you've got in the chat, but it's not really the space right now to discuss some of those things. So thank you for being here and sharing what you have already. I really appreciate it. So you were talking too about some of the tools, right? And you said getting help. Because getting back to your book again, right? So going within not just the physical aspects of yoga, and then, you know, we've talked about a few aspects with the five elements. So how would someone use your book? Let's put it that way, to get to to get to where we're talking about.
So there are lots of exercises in there, more than 20, I think, in different ways. So it's meant to be practical, things that you can apply.
Even a beginner, like a beginner could do it too.
Yes, I have had some people say that some of it is not totally beginner, but I think there's different elements of the book that will speak to people at different stages.
Perfect.
Mm-hmm. And certainly many of the exercises, many of them are actually journaling prompts. I love using a journal. I think it's so simple. And it's very accessible. You don't even necessarily need to go and buy a journal. Everybody, I'm sure, has access to a piece of paper and a pen or a pencil. Mm-hmm. Unless we've dispensed with that and we're only using cell phones. But a paper and a pen. And one of the best practices is to write your thoughts out. So a practice in the morning is to journal whatever it is your stream of consciousness is, whatever you're thinking, whatever you're feeling. Because part of what that does is you empty out this storehouse of the story you're carrying around in your own mind, mm-hmm. which is your own little echo chamber. And when you can step back from that and see it on the page, or first at least empty it out, that's exactly what it feels like. You can feel clear. Because it's not clogging up the pipes anymore, and sure. So that's a great practice of learning to work with your emotions and your mind, your thoughts and your feelings, mm-hmm. is to get that onto paper. And one of the other practices I talk about is through meditation. So when we're able to step back and observe. Mm-hmm. Develop what I call witness consciousness.
Okay.
And so witness consciousness, so witnessing is to witness, to see, and consciousness is self, right? Consciousness is being or soul, sure. or however you want to call yourself in non-physical terms, your energy. Okay. So you're witnessing yourself. You're witnessing and observing your mind, you're disengaging from your thoughts, you're disengaging from the sensory mind. So just like with the journal where you've emptied out, now you're actually, instead of using a paper and pen, you are sitting in quiet observation to watch, to be the observer. And this is foundational in any meditation practice. All meditation starts.
I'm so glad you didn't start with meditation, because the first thing, and I'm sure you've heard it, I can't meditate. I hate meditating. I love how you transitioned into that.
Well, I can understand why people hate it. It's not easy because, you know, the sensory mind is it can be very challenging. Mm-hmm. The sensory mind wants to pull us in one direction or in the other. Or it's channel flipping. So, you know, the thoughts are on, you know, on a merry-go-round. And it can be very challenging to quiet that down because, again, it's not necessarily something that's commonly thought of, that you can actually observe your thoughts. Now, it's easy for me to say this because I've been doing it my whole life. I've been watching my mind stream my whole life. So I know that there will be people who will hear this and say, well, that's impossible. And it's not. It's not impossible, but you do have to try as the starting place, because if you don't try, you'll never get to experience it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, meditation foundationally is to sit and observe and watch your breath. That's a beginning practice. Why? Because watching your breath is also very challenging. I once listened to Jon Kabat-Zinn, who's very well known, developed mindfulness-based stress reduction. And he once said, a paraphrase, something along the lines of, you know, thank goodness breathing is automatic, because if we had to be in control of our breath, if we had to mindfully watch our breath, we'd all expire pretty quickly, right?
That's true.
Right? Because watching your breath and doing nothing else, focusing on nothing else is actually really challenging. Mm-hmm. So, you know, So this meditation of developing single pointed concentration, in this sense here, what I'm suggesting is developing that witness consciousness, developing that emotional neutrality. And you, if that's all you work on in a lifetime, that's amazing. Because when we can hold ourselves in a state of emotional neutrality and emotional calm, we can go much deeper into empathy and compassion, because we're not judging. We're just observing, we're just being, and we're holding presence, we're holding space.
Because when people hear that, a lot of people get really turned off. But so for me, because I'm always moving, I have a back pain, a really severe back injury. So that's why I'm squirming someday. I don't even notice I am, right? But I'm always moving. So what I ended up doing for myself was, yes, and that is the proper way to observe your breath. I understand, but for me, and I have a mind that goes 90 miles an hour. So I had to start, like Kevin, Z Sun Dragon, I like what he suggested. He said, sorry, I got to highlight it. It went up. Mm-hmm. Now it disappeared again. Even in writing or drawing is another way to get in that meditative mindset, mm-hmm. other than getting things out on paper too, autopilots to breathing calmly, etc. So what I do for myself, mm-hmm. was I had to at first try different things, and it's not quiet, but it got me used to the fact of laying there, breathing evenly and getting into a quieter state. So I tried things like binaural beats, different tones and things like that, some guided meditations. But I find the best thing for me, mm-hmm. is to, and it wouldn't be traditional meditation, I guess, is to keep what everybody thinks runs the show, our mind, busy creating.
Yeah.
So I love to create. I'm basically on autopilot, and I'm sitting there so that my subconscious and my higher self is open. And then that's when I get the downloads. That's when I have the conversation with spirit. When, I could go on and on. And I know you know, because you've done it. And again, the goosebumps. But it takes a while to get there. But we have to start, kind of like what you said earlier, right? And it's true. Isn't there an old proverb that the longest journey starts with just one step, right?
Yeah, love to.
Right? Is that who it was? I don't know. I don't usually use quotations, but that came to mind. Would that be useful? Or do you, how else would you suggest it? Because people find that daunting, right?
Sure. I'll say a couple things. I also want to highlight, I think Sundragon is Kevin.
Kevin.
So grounding in nature. Yes, Kevin. That's also something, an exercise I give in my book of working with the earth element, is grounding through the body and connecting to the earth and bringing up that earth energy into the body. So that's
always do that. And wrap myself in gold through my crown chakra, actually.
So also, and you know, working with music and is another way. So to kind of touch on what you're saying, Laura-Lee, is, you know, so that meditation example I'm giving is just one way. So I think, so for me, meditation fundamentally is about single-pointed concentration. It's whatever you can hold the focus of your concentration and flow that concentration into an absorptive state of consciousness, absorptive state of mind. And you could say that even watching a television show is meditation. And the reason being is that if you get lost in the story, in a way, you're meditating. You're completely focused and absorbed in that thing, right? The intention is just different. And so, you know, everybody...
That would almost feel like hypnosis to me, though.
Yeah. But I think the point I'm making is that something that's holding our focus so completely...
I gotcha.
And what you're talking about with the binaural beats or different ways of coming into that that state of flowing your concentration, everybody has a different approach, and you can come to it through the body. I think, you know, runners talk about a runner's high. So, you know, whether it's some physical activity like running or a postural yoga practice or Tai Chi, or some other form of meditative healing modality, like the binaural beats, or I think there's things like hemisync or breath work, working with the breath is another way of doing it. These are all just ways of, they're different views. You know, if you stand in the center of a circle, you can only see so many slices of the circle from where you're standing. You have to keep turning around to see the whole circle. So it's really just a different point of view and a different way of trying to see, see things, see yourself. So I love that you brought that up, because I think it's just a different approach.
I just wanted to ask, because that's the biggest thing, and I'm a really big proponent of meditation. And in the beginning, I used to say I didn't have time. And one of my mentors, it's a really funny story, I won't get into it, it's too long, but basically she kept hearing spirit, and she was on the show. And I won't go through the whole story, just quickly. And she was turning bright red, and she's going, no, I can't say no. And then she says, okay, I'm hearing spirit say that it's okay to say this to you, that you'll be okay with it. And she's just bright red. And she goes, do you go to the bathroom? And I go, of course, everybody goes to the bathroom every day. She says, well, do you have 5 minutes in there? And I said, yes. And she said, place to start, right? And she was so embarrassed to say that. But I mean, I don't know why you'd be embarrassed. Everybody goes to the bathroom, right? But it was my segue in. And I didn't realize how important meditation was to me till I went to a conference years ago.
Right.
It was supposed to be a spiritual conference. And I love people, but I had no idea how much I really do value and crave my alone time. Mm-hmm. And there were people around all day long. And it was like, oh my goodness. Like, I just felt like the walls closing in, how much I miss the meditation. Or when I have a really big issue to solve or problem, I crave the meditation to go in there and sometimes receive answers. And I know that that's not the only reason why we meditate, but I'm just giving a few examples, but there's so many benefits to it. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. and I think I see a comment there. Mesh.
Hi, Mesh. She's over in Australia. So it's Tuesday over there. She's probably at work. What one do you want me to highlight? Go ahead. I'm glad you're doing this, Nicole. Thank you.
Sure. So gardening. Yeah, I love to garden. And gardening for me is another a kind of a meditative practice. But it's also another way of staying grounded and connected to myself. So both physical and non-physical, and also connected to the realm of spirit, because, you know, gardening connects us directly to nature and the realm of non-physical energy. So it can be actually a great way of meditating, because you're completely absorbed. You're just, you know, you're planting dirt, you're planting. So yes, I think gardening is one of them. And I think also Kevin said about, what did I saw?
I'll go up a bit. Hang on. I can scroll up. Let me scroll up. Peter, behave yourself here. I got to go this way.
Yeah. Holding space. I want to come back to that in a moment, because I saw that come up a couple times about what that means, but just to finish this thought with you, okay. Laura, about alone time and it's vital to recharge yourself. Mm-hmm. Especially when we are, you know, when we're giving ourselves and our time to someone else. And, you know, many of us, we do that, you know, all the time. When you're, you know, if you don't live at home alone and you've got a partner or you've got kids, you've people around you all the time, or if you are at home alone but you go out or you're with your colleagues or work or in the grocery store or whatever mm-hmm. it is, other people's energies do affect us. And so it is important to take time to come back in and to recenter and to reground yourself. And whether you think of that as a kind of meditative practice of slowing down and watching your thoughts and watching your breath, or whether you're listening to some sort of music as a form of meditation, or whether you are doing something creative, like Kevin said, drawing, whatever it is that helps you kind of recenter and refocus yourself, yes, absolutely, it's beneficial, because you're restoring and recharging your life force.
Oh, I like that. I like what you said. See, this is okay. I don't usually say this on the air, and I'm not hiding it. It's just I'm going to share it. So every morning, even if it's cold out, I'll spend maybe a few minutes. But now that it's getting nicer, every morning I try to sit outside on my front steps in the sunlight for an hour or so. But I have the most beautiful little birds around. I put up bird feeders. So I really, if I can, even if the grass is dry enough, I'll try to get into the earth, take the shoes off, get into the earth. If I have to sit on the grass, breathe, and just observe the nature and just lose myself in the process. The brain's not thinking. I'm just observing nature, I guess, is what I can say. But and then at nighttime, it's I'm a resin artist and a sculptor and stuff. So I lose myself in that process. The other thing I do too, and I'm not doing this to brag or anything, I'm sharing it because I think it can help us connect with the five elements, including I take a break from social media on the weekends. At all costs, if I can, to get away from that. And I don't know if that would be beneficial things or things you can add, you know, for people to use that book to get into some of these, because this could be very healing for people as well as open so many doorways for them, can't it? Connecting to the elements.
Well, each element represents an energy. So earth represents vitality and well-being. Mm-hmm. As it's connected to the etheric body and grounding, being grounded. Mm-hmm. And literally a lot of what we've been talking about is actually ways to stay grounded.
It is.
and I see someone talking about, you know, exhaustion.
Yeah. Marty Price, he says, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, a great way to recharge is when we sort of get scattered, when we get pulled out of ourselves, is to come back and reground and recenter ourselves. That's earth. And so if we understand what the earth element represents and where we're out of balance, so that's one of the ways I work with the elements is where are we out of balance? And understanding what those energies are and helps us to just, you know, look at things from a slightly different point of view. Again, it's just a framework and it's just one way of working with energy and healing and learning about yourself. And then with water, water can go in so many different directions. You know, if we feel stuck, water can feel like it's, you know, like a frozen lake, right?
Ooh, interesting. Okay. So, I'm loving everything you're saying here. It just, my mind goes in all these deep places that I go, I got to ask about this. And I've told authors before, I ask probably weird questions because it's just off the top of my head, but I really am fascinated and really interested in what you're sharing. Now with water, you said, okay, so it could feel like a frozen lake. Now, not that anything's more important than another crazy question that jumped into my head. We are mostly water. So does it, not that it makes it more important, the water element, I don't even know what I want to ask. I guess I'm trying to say, are we more affected maybe by this element because we are made up of so much water?
No, at least from my point of view, you know,
we're not talking about the physical body, right?
Yeah, that's okay. Right. We're made up of all the elements. Right. And, you know, again, because when we come into physical reality and come into physical form, they manifest in a particular way. But all the elements contain each other. So the fact that the body is, I think it's 70% water, doesn't necessarily mean that water is more important in this particular.
Yeah, it hit me right away because we're not, I got where you're, please finish your thought, but I was thinking that I thought, oh God, we're not just talking about the physical body here. Sorry. Yeah,
there are elements, we do have an affinity towards one element over another. So you might resonate more with one element more than, so you might really resonate with water more than you do with fire. And that also starts to tell you a little bit about how the elements show up for you and how you tend to go in and out of balance, both in yourself and what's happening around you and in you, but also in your relationship dynamics, because each person has an element that they have an affinity for and tends to be sort of their kind of their comfort zone. And we tend to operate from that. And so I'll touch back on that in a moment, but let's finish about the elements of water. You know, as I was saying, you know, it can show up like a frozen lake. That's the quality, and we can feel stuck and frozen. So when we say, I just feel completely frozen, Yeah. Well, you know, what comes to mind might be water. And how do you unstick frozen water? Well, it needs heat.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, we start to look at, okay, how do we work with this in terms of balance and imbalance? And I'm just going to give some brief examples, both in the interest of time and because a lot of that's in my book. And with air is all about perspective. So if we're stuck in the weeds, so to speak, we can't see the wood for the trees. Right. And so air is about where are we seeing things from? Are we at that sort of 30,000 foot point of view, or are we sort of down, kind of overanalyzing, overthinking, really stuck in the muck? Right. So how do we get out of that, or how do we bring ourselves back down to earth? And that's air. And fire is all about illumination and motivation and enthusiasm. And it can be the opposite too. So if you've kind of burned the candle at both ends, so to speak, and I can imagine in your role as a nurse, if you're just on all the time, it can be very easy to get burned out.
Well, I'm not able to physically work as a nurse. I use my nursing every day, but I know exactly, I am more busy now than when I worked three jobs and my children were little. So okay. I hear you. I resonate with that.
Yeah. So burning the candle at both ends, very easy to get burned out. Mm-hmm. And then finally, when we get to space kind of integrates everything and holds everything together. And that brings me to kind of the question that some folks have asked about holding space. So one way to think about space is literally as one of the five elements that balances and holds everything together. Or I should say, when the four elements of earth, water, air, and fire are in ideal balance, and I say that with a caveat of in that moment, right?
Okay.
Yeah. We are in flux, but in that moment, space holds all those elements together. Space is from, you know, when we look at it from a cosmological point of view, the elements descend from space and they sort of manifest space, fire, air, water, earth. And then when we dissolve or when a form dissolves, right? When we go out of physical reality into unmanifest form, unmanifest undifferentiation, we go from earth to water to air to fire to space. So space is holding that all together. And then in energetic terms, when we're holding space for someone, what we're doing is we're opening ourselves up as a field, a consciousness field, ideally with an intention, an altruistic intention, to be a space of loving presence. And so you are the space. It's just how you reach out with your non-physical hands. And for those of you who can't see me, I'm like one of those little emoticons right now, my little hands by my side, but reaching out to hug. And so literally like reaching out with your energy field from your heart center to hold a loving embrace when you're holding space for someone. So if a friend comes to you with, you know, some sort of crisis or just a need to talk, you know, as you sit down and get quiet in a place of compassion and empathy, I'm glad that resonates, Kevin, is, you know, you go into a field, you become the field, you become the space, and it's your energy that creates this container. And it's not physical. It's, I mean, physical in that you're present, but it's a non-physical energy.
That's why I was wrong when I asked you about the water with the scientific brain that I have. And I literally heard from spirit and went, oh, that's why I always just blurted out, oh, we're not talking about the physical body. We are, but we're not. And that's why I answered. I really have to thank you for answering that, because when I first started this journey years ago, you would always hear about holding space. Mm-hmm. And it's like, what are you talking about? Or the other one, I mean, I understand it now, but you just explained it so beautifully. Or the other one used to always be, you've got to raise your vibration. And I used to hate it. I know what it means now, but back then. So you just said that so beautifully. So thank you.
I'm glad that you resonated.
Michelle said the same. She just said it too. Lovely. Thanks for explaining holding space. So thank you.
I'm glad that's helpful. Absolutely. I'm a pragmatist at heart. So for me, you know, I think of how does this practically connect? How does this practically make sense? And that's what I've tried to do with what I've written about, is how do we take, you know, wisdom teachings? How do we take this and apply it? How is this actually practical? What can we do with it? And that's a very important value that I hold, is to make something approachable to the best that I can, in the way that it resonates for others.
Well, I think that this is an incredible book for anybody to go out there and buy it. And don't worry, we're going to tell you where you can buy it and the whole bit. But I just loved everything you said tonight. And I mean, you were speaking my language. I knew you would, from just the concepts of it, but you just have a way of explaining it. And I think that that's so important for people, because, you know, and sometimes I didn't have to remind you, and I don't say it with judgment for anybody else, but sometimes people will come on and we start getting lost in the lingo. It's like being in the medical field or a legal field and using these big, huge terms, because you're amongst your tribe, if you will, right? We understand mm-hmm. each other's lingo. But anybody, say you're at a big party, people have no clue what you're talking about. And that's why I just loved the way you've defined things tonight, and you've shared them, and you've made it really clear. And it sounds like you're doing that with the book too. So it's not just explaining the concepts, it's making it practical for anybody to understand, oh, this is what it means. This is how I use it in my life.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I hope so. You know, what I've learned in the conversation that we've had tonight too, is that, you know, we can say something one way and we can say it another way, and we can say it 10 times. And sometimes it just clicks, depending on which way you've said it and when you've said it and when you've been ready to hear it. Mm-hmm. You know, so hopefully the book reaches people at a point in time where it makes sense, you know, for them.
I'm so intrigued, because I have the book, I just haven't had a chance to delve deep into it. I'm going to be reading this one, because you've introduced me to some concepts, even that, like the Buddhic level, I was not aware of that in all my years of doing this, and just a really phenomenal way, an aspect of looking at healing. And just as you said about understanding with people, right, saying it 10 different ways until maybe if somebody's either ready to hear it or it makes that breakthrough. I think that this is such an incredible healing modality as well, that could really, I think, help on so many levels. And I just love what you had to say tonight. So I really appreciate you being here. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Laurie. It's been great to be here. And again, you know, I really appreciate the community that you have and some of the comments and the questions. And thank you for the space and asking all these questions and being in this conversation. And
I was looking forward to tonight, because I was like, oh, yeah, so much I want to ask. And sometimes I think maybe it's a scientific mind or what, I'll ask questions that I got to know, right? And I always say to people, if you don't know the answer, that's okay. But it's just the way my mind works. And before I give you a moment to let people you can tell them where to find you and what have you. I do want to thank everybody in the chat tonight for your patience and your kindness. I don't usually say something, but I know you all had a lot to add to the conversation, and it was really difficult to see. And I understand that the person that was here maybe had a lot to say, and you were very kind to them, and I thank you for that. And I tried to be kind too, and they're welcome to come back anytime. But we were finally able to see everybody's comments tonight. So I didn't ask them to leave, and you guys were very kind, and I appreciate that. And they knew that you would. So thank you. So Nicole, where can they find you? How can they get a hold of you? Where can they buy your book? And you've got classes and stuff, I think I saw on your website. Do you not?
I do. I do run classes from time to time. So my website is my name, NicoleGoodt.com. I have a Substack. So for those
who... Oh, I didn't know that. I'm going to sign up for that.
Yep. So it's my name, Nicole Goodt, or Nicole.Goodt at Substack, or however okay. the... If you just do Substack Nicole Goodt, I think I'll come
up. Okay, I'm going to find you there. I'm going to follow you.
And I'm not on Facebook. I use Instagram a little bit. So you could, if you are so.
It wouldn't let me tag you. I tried to find you and stuff, but it wouldn't let me find you.
Yeah, so I haven't been on Facebook for years. And then, you know, my website, I have a mailing list. You know, I send out news occasionally. Substack is better if you want to read long form essays where I talk about stuff like what we've been talking about, called A Seeker's Guide, my journey to an ever awakening life. And then my book you can get online, like most online places. If you default to Amazon, I forget what exactly is in Canada. Aside from Amazon, there's the ebook platform. I think it's
we've got Amazon. Yeah. We've got you guys have Barnes and Noble. We have Chapters Indigo. We have a global audience, so like there's people from all over. Jeez, Michelle's over in Australia. Usually, I did message him before the show, but I think it's probably 3 a.m. Kasun is from Sri Lanka, and those are just the people that chat. There's lots of people that lurk that don't say anything. So online's best. Usually, most people I think, can probably find on Amazon, right?
Absolutely. And if you have a local bookstore, if it's not in the bookstore, there's a wonderful website, bookshop.org.
Oh, okay.
And you can buy your book online through bookshop.org, but you can pick to support a local bookstore because not every bookstore carries every book that's published. So that's another way to support local, but just doing it online.
Well, I'm going to have you back on. I mean that in the future. I think we're booking into September, but maybe before the new year and have you back on, because it seems like everybody here really enjoyed and loved what you were talking about. So I love to bring you, not that I'm putting you on the spot, but I mean,
I'd love to
have you back on and talk more about this. I want to thank everybody for tuning in, whether you're watching on the replay or you watched or listened live. If you ever want to get a hold of me, you can get a hold of me on facebook.com/angelrock to book a reading. I do psychic meet readings. I do healing. I do mediumship. I do Akashic record readings. I just pull everything usually in when somebody books a reading. I also, somebody's asked me recently if I'm going. I had mentioned I'm working on starting some classes to do some like as a classroom sort of genre, if you will, about teaching and mentoring. So I am working on it. I have not forgotten about it. Easiest way to get a hold of me though, just reach out to me on Facebook or any social media platform. It's under Laura Lee Potvin or The Angel Rock, and I'm on every platform. Also, I have 2 groups on Facebook for The Angel Rocker Tribe for many of the spiritual type things we talked about tonight. A Paranormal University for more of the paranormal type spooky stuff. Also, don't forget to buy your tickets for Lake Superior Paracon. I'd love to meet you in person. So if you come up here, I'd love to connect with you. Also, don't forget Thursdays. David and I will be back 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time with The Thing at the Foot of the Bed. You guys, we are at 100 in our new group, The Thing at the Foot of the Bed. Do not forget to group vote. It's pinned at the top. What you want to be called, whether it's the Kevin Bacon Eaters or the Boo Collective or you guys, the Footies, because we got to pick a name soon about what you guys want us to call you. Okay, when we get to 200, you know what Dave said, we're going to be going live in there and doing free one question readings kind of randomly whenever. So we'd love to have you join us. Otherwise, I think that's everything. I want to thank you again, Nicole, for being here. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you, Laura Lee. Same.
And everybody, I will see you same time, same space. I always forget to check who's coming next week. Sometimes I remember, but it's another great guest. You know that. And otherwise, I will see y'all on Thursday. Don't forget, it was Dave's birthday on Sunday, so you can all wish him a happy belated birthday. Okay, so we'll see y'all next week. Same time, same space. Don't forget to, I forgot to mention this. How could I? I have my friends who've been on the network for a while, Philip and Julia Syracuse, coming up next with the Horsefly Chronicles. So stay tuned. If you've been enjoying what you see. Okay, hang on just for 1 sec, Nicole, please, after if you can. Just waiting for it to end.